And good morning. It's the Medicine Ball Caravan rolling here on 88.7 KRVS. I'm Cecil Doyle. Yeah, jumping in just a few seconds early. We've got a packed show this hour. Hope you can stick around. We're going to be speaking to bluegrass legend Mr. Del McCoury. I spoke to him by phone yesterday. We're going to play that interview in just a few minutes, as well as an excerpt from a Tiny Desk concert from about a year ago where they performed some great tracks, kind of a preview for tomorrow evening's performance at the Acadiana Center for the Arts. To get things going, we're going to begin with music from Robert Plant and Alison Krauss in this first set, as well as Ida May, the duo of Ida May. Also another track from Alvarado, the new album by the Wild Feathers. We start off going back to just a couple of years, 2019. The group Mercury Rev had a reimagining of Bobby Gentry's Delta Suite album from 1968. They got all sorts of singers involved. And in this track, Margot Price does Sermon with Mercury Rev as we kick off this caravan.
Set the mood, set the situation. Imagine that he's sitting in a congregation. Hey, he's talking about Judgment Day. Listen real close, hear what he say. You better run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. God Almighty's gonna cut you down. Gonna tell that lonesome liar. Gonna tell that midnight rider. Tell the gambler, rambler, backbiter, God Almighty's gonna cut you down. Great God Almighty, let me tell you my need. Head's been wet with the midnight deep. I've been down, bending knee, talking to the man from Galilee. My God spoke so sweet. God heard the shuffling of angels' feet. Put one hand on my head. Great God Almighty, let me tell you what he said. You better run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. God Almighty's gonna cut you down. Throw a rope, hide your hand. Working in the dark against a fellow man. Sure as God, live day and night. What you do in the dark will be brought to light. You may run and hide, slip and slide. Trying to take the mold from your neighbor's eye. Sure as the Lord may be rich or poor. What you reap, my brother, is what you sow. You may run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. You may run on for a long time. God Almighty's gonna cut him down. Gonna tell that lonesome liar. Gonna tell that midnight rider. Tell the gambler, rambler, backbiter. God Almighty's gonna cut him down. Gonna tell that lonesome liar.
opened up a suitcase, threw it on the floor, started picking up the pieces from the night before. Lit up the smoke, kicked the screen out the door, said, I ain't looking for love no more. Love is what you find when it ain't.
Chasing a mighty wind. Well, it's old, I know, but I can't let it go. See, I got a candle and it burns so bright in my window every night. Well, it's old, I know, but I can't let it go. You don't like to see me standing around, feel like I got shot and I didn't fall down. Well, it's old,
Robert Plant and Alison Krauss, they're teaming up again for an album called Raise the Roof, covering Lucinda Williams. Can't Let Go. Before that, Ida May doing Learn to Love You Better, and the Wild Feathers ain't looking for love no more. Here on the Medicine Ball Caravan, I understand I said the Del McCurry Band concert was tomorrow. I thought it was Wednesday today. Actually, it is Thursday, and I actually spoke to Mr. Del McCurry about this, about the concert. And with me by phone, I have two-time Grammy winner, many times nominated, 31 International Bluegrass Music Association Awards, including Entertainment of the Year, four consecutive times, Hall of Fame member of that same organization. NEA presented the National Heritage Fellowship Lifetime Achievement Award to this guy, the most awarded artist in bluegrass music. Will you welcome by telephone Mr. Del McCurry? How you doing, Del?
Fine. How you doing, Cecil?
Doing real good, and we're real excited for your performance here on Thursday night at the Acadiana Center for the Arts. So we're all pumped up for that. So so before we get into to talking a little bit, so how have you been spending this pandemic? Has, you know, not many gigs going on, so how have you been spending your time?
Oh, it's been rough, ain't it?
Yeah, it sure has.
Well, I tell you what, I guess the last date I played before everything shut down was I played the Opry on a Tuesday night. I'm a member of the Grand Ole Opry, you know. And I played on a Tuesday night, and they were talking about all this. And then that week, everything got shut down, you know, and dates got canceled and everything. So, but, you know, I thought, well, I'll take this opportunity to write some songs and listen to. People send me songs, you know, on CDs, and I just throw them in a box, and I never get to listen to them because I'm on the road a lot, you know. And so I thought, I'll just take time and get all those CDs out of that old box and listen to them.
Yeah.
And so I did, and I found that like 25 songs or something like that. And then I wrote a couple, too. I wrote two, I think, in the meantime, because I got inspired a little bit after listening to songs that people had sent me, you know. And so we recorded enough for an album, I think. And of course, we had some left over from before when we had recorded. They were in the can, you know, for like a year or two. And so So I found enough songs to do two records, really, which I probably will do that, you know. And so I kept kind of busy, and then of course, you know, I've got my own radio show, and we do that once a week, you know. Me and the boys, we're on Sirius Radio, so you know, we kept pretty busy, and you know, last fall we did. My booking agent, he found some places where we could play outside, and everybody would be separated, you know, like in pods, you know, like pods of four, and we booked quite a few dates in the fall last year, and then of course we were off most of the winter, and it started up pretty early this spring, and we've been busy this summer. We really have been.
Well, that's great to hear that you've been keeping busy, and you know.
Yeah, it kind of felt good to be home for a while, you know.
Now, a lot of these songs that you were talking about that you had, that people gave you, that's one great thing about you. I mean, you're like, you know, you're like the granddaddy of bluegrass music, but yet, you know, you're connected with so many of the young artists that are coming out, and they're just giving you material and stuff. How is that? How does that feel?
Well, most of the material I get, though, is from songwriters in Nashville.
Okay.
Just, you know, especially songwriters in Nashville, I think. Of course, I do get, most of the young guys, you know, they'll record their, if they got a good song, they'll record it themselves.
Uh-huh.
You know, which I don't blame them for that. But yeah, it's something, all the new bands that have come along, you know, and there's just so many of them, I can't keep up. I can keep them straight in my head, you know.
You're not the only one. I'm the same way. Yeah, when you've been around for a few decades, it starts to build up. There's a lot of things to keep in your brain. I mean,
it really is, you know. And of course, you know, we try to play something from a new band or a new record in our shows, you know. But then we do a lot of birthday things too, you know. Like when the old artists have a birthday, we try to do the songs by them, you know, and we try to mix it up a little bit on the radio, you know.
Yeah. Well, you've been doing this for, what, six decades now? that's hard to believe. I mean, you joined Bill Monroe's band, what, around 1963, I read?
Yes, I did. I think I played with him in 62, but I didn't join the band until February 63. And I stayed till February 64, and then left and went to California because, you know, Jed Clampett said that's the place you ought to be, is out there in California. So I took his advice.
Definitely. And yeah.
But yeah, I played a year with Bill. And I would have stayed longer, but I got married and I figured, well, you know, I need to settle down a little bit because he was on the road all the time, you know, Bill was.
Right.
And I tell you what, I enjoyed working for Bill. I really did. He was not a guy that would tell you, now do this like this or do that, sing this way or play this like this. You know, he's not that kind of guy. He just kind of learned by his example, you know.
Right. Now is it true that he's the one that kind of steered you towards the guitar?
Yeah, he did. He actually put me on a guitar against my will.
Now wait. am I to understand that you joined Bill Monroe's band as a banjo player?
Yes.
Wow. Now, did you feel you had the gumption, you know, the skills to join the king of bluegrass at that age?
Well, I tell you how it all happened, Cecil. I was playing in Baltimore in a little bar there, and I had a job playing banjo with Jack Cook. And Jack Cook, he had spent his 3 years with Bill Monroe and the Bluegrass Boys, you know. He's a great guitar player and singer, you know. And he quit, moved to Baltimore, and I got a job playing with him there. And Bill came in there one night in that little bar we were playing, and he said, I'm going to New York City. And he needed Jack Cook to go with him because his guitar player had quit, and he had this job, and he knew he could get Jack if he'd go through Baltimore, he'd get Jack to go with him up there. So Jack said, "Do you have a banjo player?" And he said, "No, I don't." And he said, "We'll just take Dale." He said, "He can play all that stuff, you know." So they took me up there with him. And I was, I guess I was 23 then. That was 60. That was still, I think, in 62.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, 62. Yeah, well, I'd have been, no, I guess I was 23. But anyway, so I went up there with him, and he offered me a job playing banjo that night. And he didn't have a banjo player. And so he offered me a job, and I didn't take him up on it because I like playing with Jack. He's close to my age, you know, and Bill, he's quite a bit older.
Right.
He was 52 then, and I was 23, and Jack might have been 24 or 5, something like that. And I like playing with Jack, you know, but you know, eventually I decided, you know, I should take that job. So I went I went to Nashville. He told me, he said, "Now look, if you take a notion that you want a job with me, you come to Nashville and call me up." He gave me his phone number. he said, "Go and get you a room at the Clarkston Hotel up on 7th Avenue. And I'll just come in there and get you whenever you come," and all this and that. So when I got there, though, there was another banjo picker there. And it's the funniest thing. We both auditioned at the same time.
Huh.
He was in that same hotel I was in. And Bill come in town, and he recognized both of us and said, "Come on, boys." Now, he's a man of few words, you know. So he took us next door to the restaurant, and we ate breakfast. It was probably early in the morning. Well, we ate breakfast, and then he took us up in the National Life and Accident Insurance Company building, which was right next to that on 7th Avenue, right next to the hotel.
Right.
And there was a room. That's where they had the Friday Night Opry back in those days. And so he auditioned us both. One played, I played guitar on a couple of tunes and sang with Bill, and Bill Keith was the other one. He played guitar and sang with Bill, and he told us, he said, "Look, it's going to work better if I use you on guitar and singing, and I'll use Bill Keith on the banjo." So that's the way he hired us both, right there on the spot.
Wow.
And I had played some guitar. In fact, the first instrument I learned to play when I was 9 years old, my brother taught me how to play the chords on a guitar, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And but I didn't stay with it long because I wanted to be a banjo picker like Earl Scruggs.
Right.
It's a long story. And I played it for 10 years. I played the banjo for 10 years. When I went to work for Bill, I had already been a banjo player for 10 years. Then he wanted me to play guitar and sing lead. He needed a lead singer, you see. And so that's what I signed on for, was singing lead and playing guitar with him.
Wow. So yeah, coming in as lead singer for Bill Monroe's band, that in itself is quite an achievement, especially at such a young age.
It was a challenge, man. It really was. I'll tell you, I could sing good with Bill, but the hardest part was learning all the songs I had to learn. You know, I had to cram like going to school again.
What do you think his repertoire was? How many songs do you think he had in his pocket back then?
Well, I'll tell you what. He had everybody from that first guy from Georgia. I forget that guy's name. He had him. He had Clyde Moody in the band. He had Lester Flatt in the band and Jimmy Martin in the band. All those guys
Wow.
that recorded all those songs with him up until I don't know. See, he joined opera in 1939. And this is 63, so there was a lot of songs recorded in between those two dates.
Yeah.
And then, too, when I went with him, he had just had a new record release, and he wanted me to learn all the songs off that, too, you know. So I did. I learned all the songs from that record. And I would go up into the library. They had a library in that National Life and Accident Company. Had a library up there with records, and they were old 78 RPMs, you know, back in those days. And they had records of all the Opry acts. Wow. So you could go up there and listen, but you couldn't take them out.
Right.
So I'd go up there, and I'd take a tablet and a pencil up there, and I'd pick that needle up, you know, and I'd write all the words down to these songs, you know, that I needed to learn. We'd come in off the road, and he'd say, "Now, Dale, I want you to..."
Now, wait, you'd write the words, but you'd remember the melodies in your head?
I kind of knew his melodies because I'd heard him a lot, you know.
Yeah.
But now, as far as singing and choruses, but as far as singing the verses, the songs, I mean, I had to write them down, and I could learn pretty fast in those days. So I would write it down, and he'd say, "Now look, this week on the Opry, I want to sing such and such a song, and I want you to sing it with me." Well, I'd have to go up there and get that record out and write them words down and learn it just as quick as I could, you know.
It was a chore, right?
Yeah, and we might only be off the road for a day or two, you know, and then go right back out on the road after the Grand Ole Opry.
Wow. Man, I'm sure you've got a million stories like that. Wow.
Oh, yeah, and you know, it was a challenge, though, and, you know, I like that, you know. I like the challenge. He just expected you to get out on stage, and he really didn't tell you anything. He just expected you to be out on stage and work hard with him, because he'd get out there and he'd work hard, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if you did that, you were all right in his book. But, you know, once in a while, some of them musicians were lazy, you know, and boy, he'd spot that in a minute, and he'd ride those guys, man, till they left.
It was kind of like being in the Army then, right?
Yeah, it was.
Well, I tell you what, nowadays you're the sergeant, and you've got your sons playing with you these days. So the tide has shifted, and how is that working for you all these years?
Well, you know what? I'm real easy on those guys. I'll tell you, they don't know how good they've got it. No, years ago, you know, I'll tell you, when they were young, and I after I quit Bill, naturally I got my own band, you know, And me and my band were all in our 30s, and my boys, you know, they were just little guys, and they were trying to learn to play, and I thought, well, I'll help them all I can, you know. Rob, he picked up on the banjo, and Ronnie picked up on the mandolin, and I'd hear them at home trying to play something, you know, and I'd just tell them a note or two, show them a note or two that they're missing, you know, and just let go with that, you know. Well, it wasn't too long until they started playing and playing pretty good, you know. And so eventually, well, I'll tell you what, to start with, I was going with a four-piece band at that time because everybody was strong in that band, the fiddle, banjo, and me on guitar, and my brother on bass, and we were all really strong musicians. We could carry on a show real easy, you know, just the four of us. Well, Ronnie, my oldest son, he started playing mandolin. I said, well, I'll tell you what, you can go with me this summer when you're out of school and just play rhythm on the mandolin, you know, chop rhythm on the mandolin.
Mm-hmm. How old was he at this time?
He was probably about 13, maybe.
Wow.
I would say that. I'm guessing. Anyway, he's always pretty small for his age, too, and he's just a little guy, you know. And he went... And, you know, he learned a lot, though, just being on the bus and going, because the other musicians that I had, they could play mandolin, you know, and they'd show him stuff, and he'd play it, you know. And before it was too long, he was taking breaks on my songs. And so then we had a five-piece band, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then my other son, the banjo picker, Rob, he come along. He graduated high school, and when he did, I needed a bass player. So he just started playing bass with me, although he had played banjo since he was about 9 and got good at it, you know. But I had a good banjo player. So he played bass with me for about a year, I think. Now, he could tell you more close about the time he spent on the bass, but he was a good bass player, man. And so my banjo picker quit, and I said, now, Rob, you're going to have to switch over to banjo now and learn all these breaks of these songs, you know. And he did right away, and I think he felt comfortable on the bass, you know, and he kind of dreaded starting that banjo again with me, but he got it quick, you know. And I'll tell you, when they're young, they'll learn fast.
Yeah, they certainly do. They certainly
do. Yeah, they will. They'll learn fast, and it's good for their timing and rhythm to get with a professional band right from the start. If they don't, you know, they get in habits of speeding or dragging, you know, the beat, because they're used to playing by themselves, you know. And
there you go.
And so if they get in a band early, that band, you know, that that band's got the timing down, the
right.
rhythm.
Because that's a skill. That's a skill in itself. Just basically melding minds with other musicians. You know.
Yeah, that is. Isn't it?
It's yeah, true. It certainly is. Now, you're going to be here in just a couple of days, Thursday, October 14th. From what I understand, you guys never put a playlist together. You guys just kind of play with what's on your mind. Is that the way this tour is going to work?
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I do requests from the audience mainly. You know,
oh, really?
After I get the band introduced, we'll start out with a song, and then maybe I'll call Ronnie up and say, now, he won Mainland Player of the Year 8 years in a row, which he really did, at the IBMA. Uh-huh. And he'll play one and sing one, and then next in seniority is Rob, and I'll get him to play, and he'll lead us off on Nashville Cats and stuff like that, and then get Jason to play a fiddle tune, feature him, and then call Alan up to play. He plays the bass, and he'll sing a song. And then, for the most part, from that time on, I say, now look, folks, while I'm introducing all these boys here, I want you to start thinking about what you want to hear now, and make sure you request songs that we've recorded, because if you start requesting other people's songs, we're in trouble.
There you go. Well,
they always do, man.
Yeah,
put together a program for us right on the spot,
That's the way it works. And it's going to happen this Thursday, October 14th, again, at the Acadiana Center for the Arts, downtown Lafayette, the James Munkus Theater. 7:30 p.m. is the start time. We're looking so forward to that, Dell. And now, with all that you've done, I don't know, what is there left for you to do, man? Any future projects you got boiling inside?
I'll tell you, my manager is good about, he's the one with the big ideas,
Okay.
And he'll come up with something and he'll say, now think about this. You don't have to do it right now, but think about this, and he'll come up with something for me to do. I never have to come up with ideas, but in my mind, the only thing I'm thinking about doing now next would be record some more songs. But well, he's going to have some project for me, I know. I'll tell you what he did one time. He called me up and he said, hey, the jazz band there in New Orleans.
Hall Jazz Band, maybe?
Yes. Preservation Hall Jazz Band. I'm so bad with names these days. But anyway, he said they want you to sing a song with them on a record, because they're doing a record and they're going to take the proceeds and give it to the young musicians. And it was soon. It wasn't too long after the flood there,
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, well, and my boys, they're on the road too with their own band these days,
Right.
And so we figured out a time when I wasn't playing and the boys were, and I went down. I said, I'd like to do that. I'd like to try it.
Now, that's kind of interesting because, I think I've read somewhere where you talked about the fact that Bill Monroe himself went down to New Orleans to learn songs.
Yeah, I tell you what, Bill, actually, what he would do, he'd go down and listen to those horns and learn things that he could play on a mandolin,
Yeah.
And, I think, he's really influenced. He really was by that, either the jazz music or that other, what do you call it? There's some other bands down in New Orleans too.
Dixieland stuff.
Dixieland, yeah, the Dixieland stuff. And Earl Scruggs, he learned a lot of that stuff too,
mm-hmm.
to play on banjo. But I told him, I said, I'd like to go down and sing with them to see what it sounds like. Well, in those years, we were playing the jazz festival there in New Orleans every year.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I went down and I sung three songs with them. I think they put them on that record. Anyway, they said, hey, why don't we get it? When you come down and do the jazz festival, why don't you bring your band over here to the Preservation Hall and let's play some together, So. So we said, okay, so we did that. And then, my son Ronnie, the first thing he told him, he said, you guys know a tune called Muhlenberg Joy? And oh yeah, we know that tune. This big jazz guy from years ago said, claims he wrote that, but we know better. That's what they said right off the bat, you know. And so anyway, there was only one chord different than the way Bill Monroe. See, Ronnie learned it from Bill Monroe, and he knew it was a New Orleans number. And so and so we recorded that on the. What happened then? Later on, we played. Both bands were booked at a state fair in Northern California. There, just north of San Francisco, and they said, "Well, look, we've got a studio out here in San Francisco. Why don't we go there and spend a couple of days and do a record?" You know, okay, so we did, and so I don't know how many songs we recorded. We did a whole record though in a couple of days and mixed it and everything, you know. And then we went on the road with the two bands and that record, you know, for quite a while. Of course, we had other dates that we played, you know, bluegrass festivals and whatever.
Yeah.
At the same time, but our agents booked us on a lot of shit. We played from New England to Florida to California, you name it, Texas. with that thing, you know, with that record.
Right.
Well, and it was a fun thing. It really was.
Well, Mr. Dell, we're looking so forward to your performance here on Thursday night. Have you played in this area?
No. I haven't that much recently.
Yeah.
I believe the last thing I did in that part of the country was the Jazz Festival.
Right. And that's been a while, so.
That's been a while. I haven't done that for a while, yeah.
Well, we're so looking forward to seeing you Thursday night. We appreciate you taking the time to talk to us here on the Medicine Ball Caravan on KRVS. Looking forward to seeing you Thursday night and looking forward to a great performance.
I'm looking forward to it too, Cecil. So I hope I see you when we get there.
All right. You certainly will.
I'll get up.
Okay. Mr. Del McCurry here on the Medicine Ball Caravan. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, Cecil.
What a treasure, Mr. Del McCurry here on the Caravan. This is a bit recorded up at the NPR studios in Washington, D.C., over a tiny desk concert. This is a Del McCurry band here on the Medicine Ball Caravan, KRVS.
I just heard that city of New Orleans go rumbling past this old shack of mine. Yeah, the windows carry on. Timbers creaking groan. That old girl is well on down the line. Some people say it don't get cold in Memphis, but I've seen that old river freeze up tight. Yeah, she used to melt me down till she caught that southern bound, cross that bridge and left me cold as ice. That old train all the way, all the good times, but the pain is here to stay. That old train, all the way, all the bad times I'm living today. Well, if I could, I'd buy myself a ticket, check out every whistle stop that came along, cover every mile of track, and I'd bring my baby back. Put a happy ending to this song. Thank you. track, and I'd bring my baby back. Put a happy ending to this song. Thank you, folks. Good to be here today. I tell you, it's kindly warm in here, though, with all these folks, isn't it? You know, that was a song that we have on a new record that we just had released about a month ago, and the Del McCurry Band, that was the Del McCurry Band song from the record. And, of course, the boys, they have their own band, and they go on the road to Traveling McCurry's, and they had a record released the same day as I did, and we have a festival over there in Cumberland, Maryland, and both records were released then, and some of the folks came from Orchard Music up there in New York City for that release party, you know, so we had a big time there, and we had a lot of bluegrass. You know, I think this is the most bluegrass we've had at our festival up there, but we'd like to invite all you folks to come to it next year. It's Memorial Day week. It goes on a week, you know, and it's there in the mountains. It's a real flat place there in Maryland, and if you look across the Potomac River, that's West Virginia, and it's like this, you know. Well, I'll tell you what. We'd like to sing a song or pick a song or sing a song, and this is one that that we recorded maybe 10 years ago, but it's done real well for us. Written by Richard Thompson. And by the way, we had Richard Thompson at our festival this year, and we did this song with him. We sang it with him. He wrote the one entitled The 1952 Vincent Black Lightning. And I've seen you at the corners and cafes, it seems. Red hair and black leather, my favorite color scheme. And he pulled her on behind and down to Knoxville they did ride. Said James to Red Molly, here's a ring for your right hand. But I'll tell you in earnest, I'm a dangerous man. I've fought with the law since I was 17. I robbed many a man to get my Vincent machine. Now I'm 21 years, I might make 22. And I don't mind dying, but for the love of you. And if fate should break my stride, then I'll give you my Vincent to ride. inside. Come down, Red Molly, to his dying bedside. When she came to the hospital, there wasn't much left. He was running out of road, he's running out of breath. But he smiled, see her cry. He said, I'll give you my Vincent to ride. Said, James, in my opinion, there's nothing in this world beats a 52 Vincent and a red-headed girl. Now Norton's and Indians and Greaves won't do. Oh, they don't have a soul like a Vincent 52. And he reached for her hand and he slipped her the keys. Said, I don't have any further use for these. I see angels on aerials in leather and chrome, swooping down from heaven to carry me home. And he gave her one last kiss and died. And he gave her his Vincent to ride.
Yes. Mr. Del McCurry, the Del McCurry Band, Thursday night, the Acadiana Center for the Arts. These are the new writers of the Purple Sage. New writers of the Purple Sage.
Somebody robbed the Glendale train, and I swear I ain't lying. They made clean off with 16 G's and left two men lying cold. Somebody robbed the Glendale train and they made up with the gold. Now Charlie Jones was the engineer, he had 20 years on the line. He kissed his wife at the station gate this morning at 6:35. Everything went fine till 9:30 when Charlie looked up and he saw there was men on horses, men with guns, and no sign of the law. And somebody robbed the Glendale train this morning at 9:30. Somebody robbed the Glendale train, and I swear I'd lie. They made clean off with 16 G's and left two men lying cold. Somebody robbed the Glendale train and they made up with the gold. Amos White was the baggage man and he dearly loved his job. The company, they rewarded him with a golden watch and fob. Well, Amos, he was a mark in time when the door blew off his car. They found Amos White in 15 pieces, 15 miles apart. And somebody robbed the Glendale train this morning at 9:30. Somebody robbed the Glendale train, and I swear I lied. They made clean off with 16 G's and left two men lying cold. Somebody robbed the Glendale train and they made off with the gold. I said somebody robbed the Glendale train and they made off with the gold.
The face lies the snake, the soul.
Yes, an amazing rendition of the Soundgarden classic, Black Hole Sun. That's new from Leftover Salmon from their album, Brand New Good Old Days, Black Hole Sun. Of course, before that, New Riders of the Purple Sage, taking the Glendale Train from their debut album. Here on the Medicine Ball Caravan, thanks so much to Del McCurry for giving us a call. Spending about a half hour with some good laughs and great stories. Medicine Ball Caravan was produced live in Cypress Lake Studios here on the campus of UL Lafayette, who hopefully join you in support of this station. Our fundraiser starts on Friday. I'm Cecil Doyle. Make it a great day. We'll do it again tomorrow.